break. It's a mini episode.
Hello and welcome to another mini-sode of You Gotta Check This Out with Mike and Dre. I'm the Mike, and this week we chat with 8 Federoff about some Fab Five. Now that the show is an old friend to me, I feel good with going more casual there. 8 has experience as a writer and background actor. In this mini-sode, we added in some bits of the main episode where 8 was comparing Fab Five to other shows he's worked on. We also get a peek into buzzer practice before the quiz. 8 was such a pleasure, and we'll be bringing him back on as a full guest soon again. I'll see you on the other side.
So, question we ask any guest is, how familiar were you with Babylon 5? You do seem near our era. Pre-show, you were mentioning Home Improvement, so you would have been watching television in this era.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
No, I missed Babylon 1 through 4, unfortunately. I have no preview.
We got good news there for you.
I'm sure that joke's been made before. I apologize.
First time. Congrats. Oh,
nice. Breaking ground. No, I know it as, unfortunately, merely just a slightly deeper cut of nerddom and sci-fi that someone might be into and usually in like a punchline for something, right? DS9 or the show called Scanners, right? Or
something it Sliders? Like, Scanners was the movie with Redford.
Sliders is a Cronenberg masterpiece. You're right, Scanners. Sliders is the one that was like a little bit more deep.
Jerry O'Connell, where he was going to different universes all the time.
I think that was the one. Yes. So people like into Sliders and people into Babylon 5 inhabited same folds in my brain.
I did know because I caught this recently. Yeah, Babylon 5 was a running punchline on Big Bang Theory, which is also now outdated. That was a running theme we've had going is, as teachers, you try and make references that are hip with the young kids. I did college age. I did graduate school and teacher's assistant there. But even that, right, you're like, I'm going to do a reference they get. And they're like, what are you talking about? So yeah, if I'm like Big Bang Theory, they're like, the Young Sheldon prequel and then Young Sheldon ending. So it's like, you can't even keep up.
And now they've got a season 3 of a Young Sheldon spinoff or something. I have no idea.
Yeah, George and Mandy's second marriage or something. Yeah.
Anyway. First marriage. It's weird. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. Right. We know TV kids. Come on.
I'm not going to plug CBS. No, I'm not going to. Yeah, that's all I'm familiar with, Babam. Honestly, I was pleasantly surprised to see another thing it did remind me of, or rather I put in the same universe, was the Dune Sci-Fi Channel movie. I think it was around 2000, right? Wasn't it the second adaptation of Dune? It very much the Vaseline on the lens kind of era of TV where everything was in somewhat soft focus. If anyone's a fan of RuPaul's Drag Race season 1.
Yeah, I know the thing. I didn't see. I saw the BBC one they did a while ago, like the British Dune. But
Drag Race season 1 had the soft soap opera, just General Hospital, like aura around people. And this also had a good deal of that. And I was so happy to see that. So to answer your question from 5 minutes ago, I still have outstanding questions about what Babylon 5 is. I have theories. Is Babylon 5, did it have any, is it based on a novel? Is it based on a previous show?
No,
I purposely didn't look up anything.
This is just the show. This is JMS, Joe Michael Straczynski's, his vision from one show written from 5 seasons as a novel on TV.
That makes so much sense because there are so many things I see it pulling from every other big sci-fi work like ever. Mm-hmm. There's so much I can see so many things like, oh, that's a bit of Blade Runner. That's a bit of Dune for sure. And that's a bit of Star Trek, but there's a little bit more Starship Troopers and a little parts.
Star
like
Trek,
that,
of course, comes up a lot, but also Twilight Zone comes up
Twilight
a lot.
Zone
in this.
With the framing and the use of black and white and the shadow work. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the Star Trek, for what it's worth, his first pitch was a Star Trek spinoff. So that's the one it's going to rhyme with the most. He pitched this show to Paramount as a Star Trek show. They took his pitch and made Deep Space Nine.
No, not just his pitch. They took his Bible that he had written, of the showrunner's Bible, and turned that into Deep Space Nine. And there was a lot, they wanted to go into legal action against each other, but because he had released a TV movie for it, that they couldn't actually sue each other if they both had it out at the same time. So it was like this legal stalemate.
The arbitration kind of thing.
Yeah. But both series got to actually get made that way. But there's always this, it's not really a rivalry. It's just all the fans of either show know that there's this other same show out there at the same time that didn't acknowledge each other for some reason.
Yeah.
JMS thought he was going to have 5 seasons for the show. He did get that, but he thought he was going to get canceled after season 4. He goes out of his way to wrap up a bunch of stuff in the midst of season 4 and then gets told, hey, you have a season 5. And it's almost as if he didn't have 3 episodes he thought he was going to have to resolve a plot. So somebody just had to tell us how it ended.
A serious amount of story compression. You can feel it happening at the end of season 4, just wrapping up everything he didn't think he was going to get to do.
It's funny, a little bit of metagaming. I saw Jerry Doyle and I was like, oh, we got our bad guy. So from like the beginning of this episode, I was pretty sure I knew who the antagonist was, at least.
I was like, huh, you saw Jerry Doyle. That's probably not possible. He died over a decade ago.
Oh gosh. I was like, did I get the guy?
I could have sworn he recently died. And you might, it's luckily it's just about a decade. But yeah, okay. So let's see, Mike, do you win? You lied. Mike is a liar on the nerd numbers portion of this. Mike has failed. Jerry Doyle passed July 27, 2016. Has not quite been 10 years.
Be very close.
It rounds up. I agree, but I'm not that. All right.
He deserves that level of pedantry. He was a great actor, great character actor. I loved him every time he popped up.
All right. So the first category is buzzer practice to see if we're ready. Question. What number is a homophone for our guest first name?
8. 8.
Correct. Correct. All right. 8 got the practice buzzer question right.
Is he the protagonist of the show and I'm watching an episode that kind of veers off his path? Because it felt like he was like the guy we're following when, especially at the beginning, he's very dewy, like a 90s protagonist is. He's just glistening in sweat and he had the hair. And I felt like,
show around this, like how much is Picard the lead character of Next Generation? Mostly, yes. He's like the thrust of most seasons plot lines that go through. But there's so many episodes where he's not even into. They do other crew members or he's only in at the beginning and end. So it's kind of like about that
interesting
ratio.
Okay, I got it. You mentioned it earlier, he has an unrealistic lack of bloodlust. He was very, like, almost took me out of it the point he was like, I don't want to fight. I don't want to do nothing. That's not why I got into being a space marine. I didn't get into the space fighting business to fight in space or something like that. It just felt
It's weird. It's a common theme that, like, throughout the entire season, he's trying to find other ways to fight back against a fascist regime on Earth without just killing all of the other people in the Civil War that they know. That's what they're getting into these episodes.
Interesting.
And he's finding a lot of ways to, like, let's turn them around to our side because that's the only thing we can do that's not just at each other's throats and killing each other.
That is true, although it's a funny thing on a previous episode I noticed in a lot of his, like, rallying speeches. When we're talking about these odd endings, right, the fade outs, he has these bizarre punctuation points where you go, wait, what? Because we're going to take it back. We're all going to rally together. Who's with me? And we're going to do it or die trying. And I'm like, wait, what? Pardon me? Or then there's another one. And we're going to stop them no matter what. And if they better pray to their God if they're against us. And it's like that,
he gets really into the speeches and into the words in the moment.
Then he gets to the end and you're like, you had me till the, let's give it a slight rewrite. Let's just try it
we're
again.
We're
going to
rewrite their DNA with the bones from their heads.
Take out some of the Teutonic Knight-esque feeling of it and we're good. Yeah. No holy words, please. The lady with the vaguely Latin accent that had the bone head, she had a haircut that was strategically around the bones. So felt like it didn't almost.
She's
a page
half human. She spent her first season as full bone head. And then and then half the bone head just came in there. But
oh, that's weird.
Part of it is so that you don't have to go through full bone head transformation makeup every episode. You just like put the wig and get the bone crown around it. You're all good.
That's an awful half. That's like an awful like hybrid species, because if you are a human woman birthing A thing with a big old bone head? I don't. No, thank you.
They do take time in season two to go on how she started getting a period and she didn't have one before the transformation. So this is a legit question.
Before we get into this scene, I have one thing I have to say about this scene. One of my many lives, I've worked low budget art department for like crime recreation shows on Discovery and stuff. And so I had to go in LA to the Warner Brothers prop warehouse. That's the big prop warehouse for everything low budget. I swear to you, I saw the wall. I recognized the wall decorations.
Oh my God.
In this scene. I swear I've seen them in the Warner Brothers prop department before. Specifically the real angular piece that was on the wall. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen right next to, and I know, because I've done that job. You get the weird angular thing and then you get the vase with the carnations, the fake carnations. That was right next to it as well. I swear to you, that was there.
That's awesome.
That's a cool place. They have a Morpheus's chair from the Matrix right next to a Game of Thrones throne. It's a very cool place.
And it tracks. This was a WB show. They filmed in a former hot tub warehouse that went out of business. So it was like just a giant warehouse that they would just redress a bunch of stuff. We've had comments on that. And like we've commented on some of the low budgetness of it. So that tracks. That is amazing. So in the low budget WB prop mansion,
the department heads on this show, I think, it seems like they use this show to do a lot of stuff they've always wanted to. Mm-hmm. They felt like they had some freedom in terms of that. Or maybe because of the budget, felt like extra incentive or drive to be very creative.
There's a couple of experimental episodes. There's not too many. There's one that's shot completely like a documentary style. It's like a reporter from ISN.
From the Fox News, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But they got to do a couple of experimental episodes like that. They're all like really memorable, yeah.
I feel like one of the pasts was in sepia and then one was in black and white. So that threw me a little bit. So like one of the pasts, yeah, there's different pasts. I was like, oh, that's okay. Lighting in this scene was great too.
Okay, I'm glad you like the life. It's interesting. I'm glad that it's funny where the one area we've been able to dig him in season four was set design versus previous seasons. We've had more to say on costumes.
There was a scene that Garibaldi would look. It was straight out of Apocalypse Now in Marlon Brando. This big bald head, half lit, and then lit again, and this beautiful. I mean, they just were doing great on this show.
Yep. The romances don't go too far in Babylon 5, or they just boil over like within an episode just to get it out for plots. Yeah.
As a plot device.
Yeah. So it might be like the one thing that Babylon 5 doesn't have is the romance part.
It's alone on Tubi in that regard, honestly.
There's a lot there that we have talked on previous episodes about.
Okay.
There's a Delenn Sheridan romantic arc. There's a Marcus Ivanova unrequited love kind of thing. But Michael Vincent Bramley, one of our film ghosts, this is a very chaste show, especially compared to Star Trek.
That's what I was getting at. Yeah. Because he barely takes her hand and kisses her at one point. Oh my God. This is like an old medieval thing. Courtship.
Yeah. And not in a malicious way. It's just overt. It was just, especially in the 90s, especially in these kinds of shows. Maybe 90s was more of a sexless sci-fi time on TV. Perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I always feel because every show for the past couple of decades, it's always a will they, won't they between any male and female who's in any scene, it seems. I mean, I remember like really getting into and thinking that around Parks and Rec, because like by the time they got to the fourth and fifth season, it's okay, just who haven't they paired up? That's why Anne is over with Tom for this, just because they've run out of characters to pair up.
I was a doctor on an episode of Parks and Rec. I played a doctor. I was
What episode?
Yeah, what
episode?
No, I was a background. I mean, I got paid and I got a line that got cut, but it was an episode where there's like a wasp attack or a bee sting attack or something. Someone gets stung by, it was in season six. And I had this arc in my head, like a pretend arc, because I played a doctor on that episode. And then later on, a few months later, I got hired for the season six finale where I played a garbage man at the big concert at the end to save Bonnie or something. So my arc was that I got a malpractice suit. And my actor's secret was that I had to get a job as a sanitation because I lost my medical license.
That's great. Put it in a universe like that too. It's got to be in another one of the Parks and Rec things when the departments had to have
that, that's right. That's right.
Sorry to steer us back to Babylon 5 and then we'll ask what we should do.
That's awesome.
This, by the way, this is the thesis. I've said this before. This show, you are now among a pantheon of guests where I'm like, I had this I could have talked to them about. And I told them, no, we are talking about the space show.
I respect that. I respect out of that. Tip of the tongue, top of the teeth.
Yeah, if you got any, yeah, I'll do any warm up. Like when you,
whether the weather be fair, whether the weather be hot, whether the weather be cold, or whether the weather be not.
Yeah, yo.
Wait. What's
get that, hit everything, get it out, all the dust out of the upper and lower register.
Do some Tim the Tool Man Taylor.
Mike, you're obligated somehow to get this in there. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Some of this, when I teach the aggressive vocals, some of the references, like for like metal screaming, I can't use Tim the Tool Man Taylor. No kid knows, watches Home Improvement on TBS after school anymore, or when it aired, I guess.
And what are kids doing anymore?
Cookie Monster always works. And for those vocals,
no, not even for them. And I used Patrick from SpongeBob, is where he's supposed to start to. Get that kind of yawn feeling, but still SpongeBob is like on waning as well, apparently.
Thanks again for listening. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get the show. Next week, we'll be covering Season 4, Episode 20 and 21, Endgame and Rising Star with special guest Dan Alvarez. Cheers, all.